Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Integral Diagnostics FY 2025 results. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Dr. Ian Kadish, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Ian Kadish. I'm the Managing Director and the Chief Executive Officer of Integral Diagnostics. I'm joined here this morning by Craig White. Craig is our Chief Financial Officer. We're pleased to be talking to you today about Integral's results in financial year 2025. 2025 was a transformational year for us. We undertook the biggest merger in the radiology industry and created Australasia's second-largest radiology provider with 145 clinics in every state of Australia and in the greater Auckland region of New Zealand. We grew our revenue by 33.7% to 628 million, including a contribution from capital for 6 months. On a standalone basis, IDX revenue grew by 6.7% year-on-year. We improved our operating EBITDA margin by 20.1%, up 0.6% versus 2024. We delivered exceptionally strong growth in diluted earnings per share of 32.9%, and we increased our dividend by 21.2% respectively. The capital merger synergies are materially above expectation. We're now expecting 14 million dollars to be delivered on an annualized basis. This is compared to the 10 million dollars, at least 10 million dollars, that we had estimated. We have delivered and realized 7 million dollars of that synergy in the first 6 months. We have a strong balance sheet with a reduced leverage at 2.6x at the 30th of June 2025, and 2.4x if you include our pro forma annualized synergies of 14 million. We're already realizing strategic benefits from the merger across teleradiology, across procurement and employee engagement, and there are further benefits still to come. We're very well positioned at this point to capitalize on industry trade tailwinds and to drive further margin expansion with revenue growth. The tailwinds include MRI deregulation, a national lung cancer screening program, where we are already seeing the benefits from those two, and the GP bulk billing practice incentive program, which will be expanded later this calendar year. We're delivering better outcomes for our patients. Our NPS score is 82, and we have strong referrer and strong radiologist engagement. Turning to three major progress updates that I'd like to talk to. The first is capital merger, where we are proceeding on plan, and synergies exceeding our initial expectations, and strategic benefits are already realized. We have our new organizational structure in place. The annualized ongoing synergies are expected to be 14 million, and 7 million has been realized already. Our procurement function has been established, and we're driving savings over and above the initial synergy projections. Our increased teleradiology scale, with contribution from the capital radiologists, has been particularly helpful, and we have generated strong employee engagement scores across both entities. In terms of like-for-like organic growth, we're going to continue our focus on driving organic growth and operational efficiencies, including radiologist recruitment and productivity and efficiency to support our growing demand for services. An increased focus on teleradiologist recruitment to grow our leading teleradiology platform. We now have 114 teleradiologists at IDXT. This is up from 80 that we had at the same time last year. We're going to continue driving additional operating expense and CapEx savings. and we're also keeping one eye on growth with greenfields. We opened 5 greenfields in the last financial year. 3 brand new greenfields in Spotswood, in Victoria, in Glenorchy, in Tasmania, and in Noosa on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. We also relocated facilities to new comprehensive state-of-the-art facilities in Ocean Grove and Smith Street on the Gold Coast. Ocean Grove in Victoria and Smith Street, Nuclear Medicine and Women's Imaging Center at the entrance to the Gold Coast. And we're continuing to evaluate M&A opportunities as they arise, because industry consolidation will continue, and the capital merger has been an example for us of the benefits that scale does provide. Moving to the next slide, where we will look at the scale and the operating platform that has been strengthened considerably since the merger with Capital. We have 145 clinics across Australia and New Zealand with 460 reporting radiologists and about 3,000 staff. We're continuing to develop subspecialty reporting using AI-enhanced screening and detection modalities. And we're continuing to invest in high-end modalities, including MRI and PET-CT. We will continue to focus on radiologist recruitment, productivity, and efficiency. We'll continue to use IDXT, our teleradiology arm, more comprehensively across the business, and to use AI as the benefits of AI become more compelling, not only in terms of clinical delivery, but also in terms of efficiency. And we will continue to leverage the scale that we now have in procurement, in IT, in recruitment, and in property to generate efficiencies. We'll continue delivering on our values as we did in FY25. The excellent average patient NPS of 82, we served 1.8 million patients in the year, performed more than 4.1 million exams, and we invested about $55.3 million in CapEx, including $27.3 million in growth CapEx. We have 460 reporting radiologists, and a significant number of these radiologists are also shareholders in our business. And we're growing IDXT and broadening our footprint across the group of subspecialty areas, assisted by our AI-enhanced screening and detection capabilities. We now have a little over 3,000 employees across the business, and we see strong engagement scores across the business annually. Our annualized merger synergies are in excess of what we had projected, more than the at least $10 million that we had indicated. Revenue and EBITDA have improved nicely. Increased operating NPAT by 74.4% to $31.6 million in the year. And we've declared our 4 cents dividend, fully franked final dividend. We will continue to deliver on our ESG strategy, and we'll continue to embrace change. In fact, the most notable example of our embrace change value that we have is the one team that has been created across the ex-Capital personnel and IDX. The merger has been almost textbook-like in its planning and its implementation with regard to integration as well. And we really have the one team now focused on what unites us and providing better care together. I'll hand over to Craig now to take us through some detail on the financial performance.
Thanks, Ian, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking the interest to join the call. I'll take you to slide 7 of the investor presentation. Ian's already referenced some of the highlights, but just to reiterate, we saw on a consolidated basis strong revenue growth, 33.7%, with an expanded margin from 19.5% to 20.1%, reflecting the combination of the two groups, IDX and Capital, and the $7 million of synergies, and that drove the stronger growth relative to revenue of 38.3%. Just coming a little bit further down the P&L, you can see that at the operating EBITR line, we also saw margin expand further to 11.1%, up from 9.8%, being a function of depreciation. We can talk to that perhaps in the Q&A. As Ian said, the operating diluted EPS was up strongly by 32.9% and the dividend at 21.2%. The dividend growth is slightly lower than the operating diluted EPS, which is just a function of the weighted average calculation of shares on issue in the EPS calculation. Importantly, we've really focused on driving free cash flow in the group, and with operating EBITDA 38.3%, operating free cash flow is up even more strongly at 42.9% at $80 million. And that, on a combined basis, taking EBITDA and the net debt position, has driven a reduction in our leverage from 2.8 times at 31 December down to 2.6 on a reported basis at 30 June 2025. Or if you pro forma that number for the additional $7 million of synergies that we expect generate in the first half of FY26, the pro forma number for leverage comes down to 2.4, consistent with what we've said before, that we expect leverage to decrease gradually over time. Just taking you to slide 8, slide 8 presents a full year pro forma profit and loss, and I think the key messages here that obviously we've reported in our results an EBITDA margin of 21.1%, but had we owned Capital for the full year, that margin would have been 20.4%. And if you factor in, obviously, the full $14 million of synergies, then that number would be higher still. I'm sure we'll get into it in the Q&A, but you'll see that on a standalone basis, the operating EBITDA margin for IDX was slightly lower. That was fundamentally a function of the reduction in CT reimbursement from Medicare by 2% from 1 November 2024, together with the impact of clinical labour shortages, particularly radiologists, and associated cost pressures, especially in the regional areas, consistent with what we've talked to before. So turning to slide 9 to discuss revenue in a little more detail, you can see that the combination of Medicare indexation, mix, and volume has driven solid operating revenue growth in Australia of 7.3%. And importantly, when you compare that to Medicare for FY25, that 7.3% compares to 8.3%, so a 1% gap. But importantly, that gap is significantly reduced from the gap that we saw at 31 December for the first half, which was a 2.7% gap. Average fees per exam have increased by a solid 5%, being a function of both the price and mix, as we continue and the industry continues a shift to the higher end CT, MRI and PET scan modalities. Pleasingly, Capital also delivered a 7.3% growth when you adjust for the closure of four clinics, the sale of Melton, which was required as part of the merger, and an insurance recovery that Capital had in the prior year. New Zealand's growth, as you can see from a revenue perspective, was more muted, and we can no doubt discuss that in more detail in the Q&A. Worth noting, though, that New Zealand is now a much smaller part of the group following the merger with Capital. Just turning to operating expenditure on slide 10, I think the key messages here are that you can see that operating expenses as a percentage of revenue are down overall 0.6%. But if we look at the individual lines, you can see the benefit of some of the procurement initiatives that we've put in place following the merger. So on the consumables line, consumable expenses were 40 basis points lower as a percentage of revenue compared with the prior year. Labor costs were 30 basis points higher, reflecting the clinical and, in particular, radiologist shortages and labor cost inflation in regional areas. You can see, though, that the labor efficiencies that we've achieved post the merger with Capital mean that labor costs as a percentage of revenue have basically come down 2.2% or 220 basis points compared to 1H FY25. In a similar profile to consumables, equipment costs have come down by 30 basis points, which is a function of some of the procurement efficiencies that we've been able to achieve so far, given the larger size of the group. Occupancy costs increased slightly by 20 basis points, just reflecting CPI increases embedded in leases and a few adjustments to make good provision. On the technology front, we're beginning to see, I think, some of the benefits from the investment that we've put in over the last probably 2 to 3 years in building out our IT platforms, including cybersecurity. So technology costs have come down by 10 basis points. On the larger fixed cost base of the group, and then overall other expenses have decreased by 40 basis points, and that again is just a function of an ongoing focus on controlling discretionary expenditure. Turning to slide 11 and cash flow, as I mentioned earlier, cash flow, operating free cash flow across the year has been strong at 80 million, up 42.9%, or expressed as a conversion, as a percentage from a conversion perspective, it's at 85.4%, up from 77.2% in the prior year. Turning to capital expenditure on slide 12, you can see that across the year, total capex for replacement capital was 28 million, growth capex of 27.3, roughly evenly split, with a breakdown there just showing some of the new greenfield sites that we have opened during FY25. Just touching briefly on slide 13 on the balance sheet, I think we've discussed previously the leverage coming down from 2.8 times at 31 December down to 2.6 reported now, or 2.4 on a pro forma basis, and we would expect that downwards trend to continue. Importantly, we maintain significant liquidity headroom under our facilities of just under $120 million with significant cash on hand at 30 June of $52 million. I'll now pass back to Ian to take us through an overview of the industry and regulatory update. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, Craig. We're nicely positioned to capitalise on some positive industry fundamentals. The ageing population and increase in chronic disease will continue to drive the use of diagnostic imaging, especially given our ability to detect disease early. Medicare DI benefits and services are growing consistently above the long-term trend, and I'll show you the graph on the next page. Medicare indexation for financial 26 is 2.4%. And the structural shift to the higher value modalities will continue both in Australia and overseas in the OECD countries, where we're seeing a continued movement towards high-speed CT, MRI, and PET-CT. Importantly, from July this year, we hold 42 fully licensed MRIs in Australia. That's twice the number of fully licensed MRIs that both groups had individually last year. The National Lung Cancer Screening Program from the 1st of July is driving growth in screening CTs and also follow-up growth in interventional CT and PET CTs. The Health Department has committed $264 million to the screening program over the four-year forward estimates. It's an outstanding program for patients as well as for us, the industry. The technological advancements we've seen in teleradiology, which currently we provide, is about 15% in the work we do, and AI, where we have about 10% of the scans that pass through our AI algorithms, enhance quality of care, and also improve labor productivity. The proposed expansion of the GP Bulk Billing Practice Incentive Program to all Australians with effect from 1 November 2025 will continue to increase GP visits and radiology referrals, and particularly in regional areas, because the bulk billing incentive for the practices in regional areas are 2 to 3 times what the incentive is in the metro areas. The expedited specialist pathway for radiologists from the UK and Ireland is expected to be implemented later this calendar year, where reciprocity will be provided for their overseas credentials by the Medical Board of Australia and APRA. And the government has also pledged new funds for 400 new nursing scholarships and 2,000 more doctors. Turning to the Medicare graph on the next page, what's notable on the graph is the continued growth of both benefits and services above the long-term trend lines, but also the divergence between the services and benefits lines, which continues to be evident and has been growing in recent years. And this is because we're doing a lot more across the industry. We're doing a lot more MRIs, CTs, and nuclear medicine studies like PET CTs, and relatively fewer of the basic x-rays and ultrasounds. And this trend will continue as the medical industry evolves and takes advantage of the technology that's offered in these newer diagnostic technologies. Moving to our FY26 strategy, priorities and outlook. Our strategy remains the same: to drive organic earnings growth, including a relentless focus on radiologist recruitment and productivity and operational efficiency, to accelerate the use of teleradiology, digital and AI, to drive our ESG strategy, and to continue to lead through our values. We will complete the IDX and Capital merger integration. We'll continue to realize synergies from the integration, and we will continually look at the market as the market evolves and consolidation in the radiology space continues. Our outlook for FY26 and beyond is that IDX, as a specialist high-quality provider of diagnostic services, is strategically very well positioned to benefit from the positive industry fundamentals and to grow our services strongly going forward. IDX, including Capital, achieved a 7.0% revenue growth in July on a like-for-like basis with 4 closed clinics and the sale of the Melton Clinic versus the prior corresponding period. Our revenue growth and operating EBITDA margin is expected to continue to expand further over time, driven by the inclusion of the full $14 million in annualized synergies, the ramp-up of the new greenfield and brownfield investments, most of which occurred in the second half of the financial year. Scale benefits, including the increased use of IDXT teleradiology, both internally and externally, together with the procurement efficiencies. And this will be supported by the further deregulation of MRIs and the growth of the National Lung Cancer Screening Program. We do expect this to be partially offset by ongoing clinical labor shortages and cost pressures, together with an alignment of Capital's repairs and maintenance accounting policy to IDX. In FY26, we expect that replacement and growth CapEx expenditure will be between $45 and $55 million. We'll turn now to Q&A. And the first question would be coming in from David Stanton at Jefferies.
Good morning, team, and thanks very much for taking my questions. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'll start again. Thank you very much for taking my questions. And congratulations on a very solid result. Look, I wonder if you could give us an idea of what you're expecting for Medicare market growth in revenue terms for F26, given the puts and takes that we've seen and you've laid out, please.
I'd expect, David, that we'll see continued growth, especially in the higher value modalities, and the growth will be propelled by the MRI deregulation, where the upgrade of the partial licenses to full licenses, as well as the additional licenses that practices like ours are able to add to clinics like Imaging Olympic Park, for instance, where we now have three MRIs in place. So we expect that the MRI deregulation plus the National Lung Cancer Screening Program will continue to propel or to drive Medicare growth, and we expect the growth to continue to be in FY26 above the long-term trend.
Thank you. Above long-term. And second question for me, and then I'll get back in the queue. One for Craig. Can you explain to us a little bit about the capital, as you've called out, the capital repairs and maintenance accounting policy and how that's going to impact profitability into 2026, please?
Sure, David. So look, as part of the, the integration of the business and doing all the purchase price accounting and then looking at the accounting policies, we've obviously aligned all those with IDX's existing policies. And effectively, within the results, so for the 6 months, there would be about $450,000 of repairs and maintenance cost that has gone through the P&L that would not have gone through the P&L for capital on a standalone basis. Capital's accounting policy was slightly different, but I think IDX takes perhaps a slightly more conservative approach to expense things that are in the repairs and maintenance nature. So I guess if you wanted to annualise that number, it's probably in the order of, $900,000 on a full year basis.
Understood. Thank you.
And your next question will come from Saul Hodgson with Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, Ian and Craig. Hope you're well. My first question is, of the increase in the synergies that you're now guiding to $14 million, can you give some color or detail as to where the extra $4 million comes from? Is it additional cost out on procurement? Are there any revenue synergies baked into that $4 million? Just some context there would be great.
Yeah, sure, Saul. So good morning. I think as we've talked about the half year, the bulk of the synergies were realised at or around the time of the acquisition from a headcount perspective. Within that number of seven, there would be about $5 million of headcount synergies. They were pretty much in line with what we'd planned pre-merger. It was just a question of realising. It's probably a few hundred thousand dollars more than perhaps we anticipated, but that number of around five is what we expected. I think the incremental two is a function of obviously the elimination of the public listing costs, but more particularly where we've seen the upside has been in procurement. So we had very little in the original $10 million for procurement, and I think as we've gone through the work and the diligence, those procurement synergies have come through higher. I talked earlier about benefits we're seeing at the consumables line, benefits of the equipment service line in terms of, you know, obviously as a larger group, we are able to negotiate better agreements with the equipment suppliers. But we've also seen procurement efficiencies and other expenses, particularly in areas like IT, where, you know, costs on a per-click basis for reading scans have come down and things of that nature. So it's really procurement where we've seen the upside. And I think we'll continue to see some further benefits over time. It's just difficult to put a number on it as we continue to sort of, I suppose, leverage our larger scale in the market. Probably just one thing, Saul, I might touch on just whilst we're talking about synergies. You know, people may be wondering how, if you have 7 million within FY25, how that annualises to 14 million on a full year basis, given there's probably a ramp up in the second half of FY25. The reality is that, well, firstly, most of those synergies, as I say, were realised around the time of the merger in terms of headcount, but there is effectively probably a one-off, what we've called before, an administrative efficiency around billing that's in that second half FY25 number. That won't recur, but there are then some other efficiencies that are occurring that roughly offset that number so that together we achieve 7 million in the first half and then 14 million on an annualized basis.
Great. That's very clear. And I had one other question as well. You gave the 7% growth rate for July month, but that's normalized obviously for clinic closures and a clinic sale. Can you give us a sense of what that growth was on a reported basis for July?
To be honest, it wouldn't have been too much different because the clinic closures are relatively small. I mean, we sold Melton, obviously. That was a profitable clinic. That was a required disposal by the HBC. And I'd also say that, you know, we've reported 7% just for working days, but that actually is the same number on a reported basis. There's no difference on working days. So, yeah.
Okay. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Your next question will come from David Lowe with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Craig, you alluded to the IDX core margin going down a little. Can I get you to talk to that? I mean, I'm guessing labour is going to form part of that answer as well, so maybe you could touch on what's happening there. And I guess I'm interested to know whether you think there's really any light at the end of the tunnel on the labour challenges or the labour cost challenge, please.
Yeah, sure, David. I think I've called out two things that have really driven that slight decline in the margin, one being the, you know, 8 months of the impact of the 2% cut in CT reimbursement, which, you know, IDX does, would have a higher weighting of CT relative to the market, just given that we're more of a specialist provider. So that would have impacted us probably more than some others. So that certainly dampened the margin. And then obviously this piece around labour costs that we've talked about in terms of particularly radiologists in some of the regional areas, Central Queensland, Western Australia. So then the question, I suppose, is, you know, how do we see things going forward? I mean, I think a couple of things. One is IDXT has, through this back half, continued to grow. We now have 114 IDXT doctors reporting, and that clearly is a solution to the problem, and we will continue to grow that business. It is growing at least at twice the rate of the overall business, which really helps, I think, in terms of reducing costs, but also providing flexibility on where the reporting is required across the group in terms of dealing with reporting lists. The other thing I think is, and I'm sure Ian will probably want to talk about this, but you'll see Ian talked in the industry and regulatory update that later this year there will be an opening up of this expedited pathway for doctors to be able to move from the UK and Ireland to Australia. There's a significant remuneration differential between Australia and the UK, which, you know, together with lifestyle and other factors, I think makes a pretty compelling proposition. So we think that that will help not only us, but also the industry. And, you know, I think those things combined with probably we would expect to see a slowing of probably the growth rates in the reporting contracts in these regional areas, which have been a challenge to service, particularly in the first half of this year. So I think the combination of all those things would give us some confidence that, you know, the issue hasn't gone away, but it's moderating, and we're dealing with it. And to be honest, in the broader scheme of the overall shape of the revenue growth and margin profile, I think this will become a lesser part of the story.
Just to add to that, thank you, Craig. The teleradiology business is the one business within our group that is able to continue to attract large numbers of radiologists with an interest in joining us and in joining teleradiology and doing teleradiology with us. We have, I believe, leapfrogged many in the industry with the technology that we now offer in teleradiology, and it makes it a lot more attractive for radiologists to join our group when they're able to use the technology to see more patients within the same amount of time than they could with the older teleradiology systems. So if we look right now at IDXT, we have a pipeline of 20 or 30 radiologists that are looking to continue to join us over the next few months that will increase the number beyond the 114 we have right now, up from about 80 we had a year ago. And we continue to see growth in teleradiologists and a strong demand for the teleradiologist business we have. The other thing about teleradiology is that the larger amount of work you have, the more you're able to provide radiologists with the scale and the subspecialization opportunities that they're not able to get with smaller groups. It also gives us the ability to continue to staff 24/7 and to have redundancy to service the hospital contracts after hours by using radiologists in Australia and New Zealand, but also radiologists that are based overseas in Europe and the Middle East. So teleradiology is an important part of our ability to service the growing demand in our industry, and it will be helped by the expedited specialist program where we're going to be providing reciprocity for the overseas credentials in the UK and Ireland that radiologists have, and we expect that this program will be implemented during the latter part of this calendar year. Our expectation, based on the information we have from APRA and the medical board, is that the program should be implemented in the October-November timeframe. It has been implemented for other specialty areas other than radiology. So, for instance, in OBGYN and anesthetics, as well as GP and psychiatry, the program has been in place for some time, and we're looking forward to it being opened up for radiologists as well.
I think that was a very comprehensive answer. I just, the only question I otherwise had really is, will the incoming UK Ireland radiologists be required to work regionally?
Yes, they will. They'll still be required to work for up to 10 years in regional areas. That will not change from the current requirement.
Great. Thank you very much for taking my questions.
Thanks, Adam.
Your next question will come from Stephen Wien with Jarden. Please go ahead.
thanks, Ian and Craig. Just a few questions for you. I wonder, you've given that revenue insight into July. I wonder if you could just talk to MRI specifically and what you're seeing on that front now that you've got a month worth of experience. Appreciate it's not very long, but just to sort of give us some colour around what's happening post that deregulation?
Thanks, Steve. So MRI utilization has increased quite nicely since the deregulation. We are seeing MRI volumes, well above where they were historically. We have twice the number of fully licensed MRIs now than we had a year ago. So the MRI deregulation is occurring, I suppose, on track for us, where we expect to be. Just moving on, I suppose, to the National Lung Cancer Screening Program would be ahead of expectations, but MRI deregulation is roughly where we expect it would be at this time. I think, Steve, it'll be important to look at a longer period than 1 month to really see the full benefit of these programs coming through. Even though MRI dereg did kick in on the 1st of July, there is a time period that specialists need to become aware. As much work as we've done to make them aware of the MRIs in the area, it's still, habits do need to change and referral patterns need to change. And we'll continue to see, I believe, extra volumes coming in from MRI, and particularly in Australia, where historically our MRI utilization relative to the rest of the OECDs has been a lot lower. So the deregulation is going to help put us on a par with the rest of the developed world in terms of providing our patients with access to this very useful technology.
Great. Thanks, Ian. I wonder if I could drill down a little bit further. I mean, I noticed that you apart from the partials moving to a full MRI license, you had two sites where you brought in a brand new machine to take advantage of the new structure at Olympic Park and John Flynn. Were they part of this revenue growth that you've quoted for July? And if you've seen, is the utilization of those new machines, given you went ahead in terms of your numbers, are you seeing that they are being well utilized within the sites that you put them into?
John Flynn has done very well, so the new magnet there is beating expectations. Imaging Olympic Park, we did run into a slight technical issue having three MRIs next to each other, and we did need to resolve some of those technical challenges, I suppose, having, the three magnetic fields so close to each other, and ran into some issues during the month of July, such that for most of July, we only had two of the three MRIs operational. Imaging Olympic Park, as you know, is a very high volume site. The MRIs there do between 40 to 50 patients a day, almost every day of the week. So, being down one MRI for most of the month at IOP, at that site, meant that we were not meeting the, the projected volumes that we expect to get from Imaging Olympic Park for the rest of the year. It's important to note, though, that Imaging Olympic Park would be one of the few sites anywhere, especially private sites, that have three MRIs on one site. So there was some learning in place that needed to occur to ensure that the three MRIs could all work well next to each other. But that's in place now. And as of today and this month, during the month of August, we have three MRIs fully operational at Imaging Olympic Park, probably more MRIs than any private practice has on any one site in the country.
Great. Next question I had was just with regarding your reporting contracts. I mean, some of those were reset, and I'm just curious as to what the volume or the utilization of those contracts looks like and whether or not there's a chance that you might, for the next term of those contracts, push up against that cap where it sort of imposed some margin pressures at the back end of the year or back end of that contract.
We've continued to see pretty strong growth in the public sector hospital contracts. It helped us, for example, in Queensland, where the contract reset on the 1st of July. and the growth has been within the parameters of the increase that we will be receiving in that contract to reimburse us for that strong additional growth. I would expect that that growth at some point over the course of the next year has got to temper a bit and become a lot more normalized. In fact, if you take a look at the Medicare numbers in the second half, you'll easily be able to see that the Medicare numbers have not grown as strongly as they did previously, and a lot of that strong growth in Medicare has come about from the public hospital EDs that have, you know, historically seen such very strong growth. So I would expect over the course of the next year that we would see that growth tailor off, that very strong growth tailor off.
Yeah, which obviously has benefits from a margin perspective because you're not breaching that cap. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. Last one, just with regards to your CapEx in the year, it came in it came in at around 55, and I think you've been guiding to 60 to 65. Just interested in where you achieve some savings there, and I guess similarly, we had expectations that CapEx would be of a similar order going into 26, and where you're getting some savings there as well, based on your guidance.
Sure, Steve, I'll take that one. So look, I think first of all, just to be clear, the CapEx actually spent was around 55 with IDX and Capital on a combined basis, but only remember for the period that Capital was under IDX ownership. If you actually pro forma that to look at it in terms of what IDX and Capital spent for FY25 as a full year, that number's around 65. So it came in at that top end of that range that we referenced at the half year. So hopefully that clarifies things for FY25. I think for FY26, we're guiding to a lower number of 45 to 55. And that's really a function of probably just leveraging the existing installed base of equipment that we've now got across the clinics. We've gone through a detailed analysis of where we've got capacity in our machines. And so there, you know, there's just not an opportunity for us to increase utilization, move patients where we might have a waiting list in one clinic to an adjacent clinic where there's capacity on the machine. So I think that, you know, we're pretty focused on looking to lift our return on invested capital. And so the capital spend in FY26 will be a little bit lower. So hopefully that helps.
Yep, that's very clear. Sorry, I did say that was the last one, but I did think of one just now. On your interest, you mean you've obviously de-geared through the acquisition. I'm just wondering if you can give us any insight as to what sort of effective interest rate we could expect now that you start moving down the grid with your lenders.
Sure. So see, probably the way I'd answer that is, you know, you'll see in note 28, we talk about effectively the effective interest rate on the debt. The debt facility was 6.24% for FY25. That was down from 7.03% in FY24. Since then, obviously, the time of the merger, we did refinance. So coming into FY26, the interest rate is lower as a function of, firstly, the, you know, base rate reductions that the RBA put through, but also the lower margin that we've negotiated. So, you know, I would guide you to a number that's probably half to three quarters of a percent lower than that 6.24 for FY26. That's obviously based on current interest rates they sit today. You know, depending on what the RBA does in the future, we'll determine where it really lands. So certainly we'd expect to see that interest expense come down. I might just also, whilst we're talking interest, just perhaps clarify that when you look at particularly the supplementary information, the investor pack on page 24, you'll see a breakdown there for depreciation and finance costs between, you know, true depreciation of plant equipment and right of use assets, and then the interest expense on the debt facilities versus right of use assets. So I just want to talk a little bit to the purchase price accounting and the impact that that's had on the financials. So obviously we've had to fair value all the assets for capital coming into the group under AASB 3. But we've also, as part of that process, had to effectively restate capital leases to the incremental borrowing rate at the time of the merger. That rate was about 6%. But importantly, that rate was quite a bit higher than the interest rate at the time that capital originally put those leases onto its balance sheet. So the effect of that is it's increased the finance cost for the right of use assets. And you can see that on that slide. Now, there is an offsetting impact to that because as part of that same exercise, IDX basically brings all the capital leases on, both for the initial term of the lease, but also for any options. The impact of that is reduced depreciation. So if you were to look at the impact of the higher interest offset by lower depreciation, both right of use assets and plant equipment, you're probably looking at about $1.5 million impact for the half year on a net basis in terms of a net increase in cost. So the reason I'm covering that is, you know, on the one hand we've got what we call real interest expense on the debt coming down, but we have got that slightly higher net cost as a result of the purchase price accounting.
Understood. Thanks. That was very helpful, Craig.
Your next question will come from Craig Wong-Pan with RBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I was going to ask a question on why the revenue growth in July has only been 7%, but I think part of that's due to one of your MRIs being out for most of July. I mean, are you able to split out what kind of benefit you have seen from the MRI deregulation and lung cancer screening program in that month of July?
Yeah, we haven't provided, Craig, the detail behind MRI deregulation growth specifically or lung cancer screening, but suffice to say that during the month of July, we did not get the full benefit from MRI deregulation. And lung cancer screening, even though it came in above expectations, we did expect and did see that the initial demand has been growing. So I expect that as the lung cancer screening program becomes better known and better marketed by government as well as the industry, we'll continue to see growth. At least that's what the overseas experience has been, just continued growth from the initial baseline levels. So I'm not giving any sort of numbers in regards to July, but I can give you a directional trend that we expect for both. For MRI deregulation, we will get continued growth, especially when the high volume side of the AOP is operating on all three cylinders, if you will. And the National Lung Cancer Screening Program will continue to grow month on month based on our expectations going forward, at least for financial 26.
Craig, the other thing, just to probably unpack that number a little bit further, remember what we've given you is a group number, that's Australia and New Zealand. I referenced earlier that growth in New Zealand has been soft. So if you were to look at Australia only, the number would be close to 8% for July. And then it would probably be slightly higher still by virtue of the, you know, in reference to, say, the MRI machine at IOP not been fully operational for the full month.
Okay, that's helpful. And just wanted to drill down a bit more on lung cancer screening. So with other programs you've seen, I mean, this is a multi-year program. Should we be thinking of this as like a gradual ramp up in year one, and so really kind of year two is when you see a lot of that benefit when with patients being screened in that second year, or how should we think about the first year?
I would expect that we would continue to see ramp up throughout the course of financial 26. We will reach a steady state though, a steady high state in terms of lung cancer referrals, where the initial referrals will continue to come in at, you know, a fairly high level based on our expectations for the remaining 3 years of the four-year program. But importantly, in addition to those screening tests, we will then start seeing a lot more referrals for the cancers that are picked up in the lung cancer screening program, because the reason it's in place is to pick up cancer, and we expect that roughly 3%, depending on the study, it does vary, but roughly 3% of those patients seen will have cancer. Roughly 15% or more, 15 to 20% will need follow-up studies. So we will, you know, just in terms of lung cancer screening, we'll continue to see ramp up, at least for this year, and then steady high state going forward. But then the referrals from the program will continue to grow for some years after. A lot of the patients in that program need to come back for further studies. It's just a question of whether those studies are, you know, needed in a year's time or 6 months' time or any shorter time frame than that.
Thanks. And then my last question, just on competition, like we had been hearing a bit of competition from bulk billing providers, more so in Victoria, but if I look at, you know, the capital numbers, they seem to be pretty good. Could you just talk about how that bulk billing business has been experiencing competition or not across kind of the Victorian and the other markets that it operates in?
Yeah, there's no question that the bulk billing competition in Victoria is higher than it is in other states, but we've not seen any pickup in terms of bulk billing competition, at least not materially across the business. So there are pockets in Victoria that, you know, RDX practices or capital practices have been impacted by some new bulk billing competitors over the course of the last year or two. I can't think of anything material in the last year, but in the last year or two. But yeah, it's been mainly limited to Victoria. There's been some competition, I guess, in on the Sunshine Coast as well. But again, it's not material. It's roughly at the same level that it has been for quite a long time.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question will come from Andrew Payne with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Ian, Craig. Congrats on the good result. Just want to touch on indexation, so a bit of a step down versus prior year. Just good to get your thoughts around if you see this as a fair level given the current environment. Really wanting to know if you see this as a bit of a margin headwind in the 26. I know there's a few moving parts here with, you know, CT reductions and MRI and that, but just, you know, if we can drill down on the indexation and, you know, the outlook for that.
The indexation number came in roughly where we expected it would be. It would be maybe at the slightly lower end of that range. So we expected an indexation number around 2.5% or thereabouts. It came in at 2.4%, so, you know, a little lower than what we were expecting it to come in at. But importantly, this year we do not have the reduction in CT that we had from November last year. So November last year, there was a 2% reduction that was implemented in CT reimbursements as of November 2024. And that hurt our results a little in the second half because we're over-indexed to CT. But this year, the 2.4% applies across the modalities we offer.
Yeah, I might add to that, So, if, you know, if you were to look at FY25, the 3.5% increases and then 2% cut in CT, I mean, on a blended basis, it equates to about 2.7% for FY25. So remember, that was in an environment of higher inflation coming into the year. Obviously, as we go into FY26, the government will be looking at inflation coming down, and I think, therefore, the 2.4% that's been set, whilst it's probably a bit lower than we were expecting, probably hoping for, sort of makes sense in that light, I think.
Okay, that's great. So kind of going forward, it feels like it'll be around that level, unless there's, you know, more offsets or something to consider there.
I mean, I think the as we understand it, the way that the government and Medicare think about it is that it is a reflection of the CPI.
Yeah.
So where CPI goes, that guides the setting the indexation.
Okay, that's great. And then just on just one thing on AI, you mentioned in there that 10% of scans are being done via AI. Could you just see if you could unpack the benefits you've seen from this and, you know, what percentage that could lift to over the next few years and, you know, how that's been deployed and, you know, supporting the radiologist?
Importantly, Andrew, the 10% of scans are not being done by AI, they're being assisted by AI. So there's a radiologist doing the scans and using AI as a tool, just like they use, you know, everyone uses many other tools in the business. AI is just a very important tool and one that's growing in importance, both from a clinical perspective as well as with regard to operational efficiency. I would expect that the use of AI in our industry is going to continue to grow. And I think that now with the lung cancer screening program, we're getting close to a tipping point where AI really drives efficiency and clinical quality. And the reason that I say that is if you look at lung cancer screening in particular, it's a high volume modality and it's one that lends itself particularly well to an AI intervention. It's very difficult to do lung cancer screening without the use of AI and still make it profitable. Whereas what AI does is it reduces the amount of time that the radiologist spends on the scan, and it allows us to make a, you know, good margin from these screening studies.
Yeah, okay. So you know, that's been the debate for a long time. You know, is it going to be a decision support tool or, you know, a tool to replace radiologists? And I think decision support tools where everyone's landing. So you're kind of implying that the efficiencies to read more scans per radiologist is, you know, where you're going to get the benefits from.
I think that's right. I think, you know, in the same way as we saw technologies in the past, digital technologies and then PAC systems allow radiologists to see many more scans per day than they had seen prior to that. I think that AI will do exactly the same thing going forward. In fact, the benefit that we will see in AI may be even more pronounced because it is such a powerful tool.
Okay, that's great. And can I just throw in and just clarify the 14 million synergies that you're talking about? Is that all being delivered in 26, up from 7 in 25 and add another 7 in 26?
Correct, Andrew.
Okay, that's great. Yep, all good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question will come from Sasha Kareen with Evans and Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Ian and Craig. Look, just wondering whether or not you think IDX can actually, as a group, can actually outgrow MBS in FY26, given you seem to have a bit of a disproportionate benefit from the increase in full licensed MRIs, and you're going to get the bulk billing benefit into the regional areas as well. Is there any reason why you can't grow as fast as or faster than the MBS this year?
Yeah, we're very conscious, Sasha, to under-promise and over-deliver. I do think that you know, we will get closer to the MBS numbers, and you know, there is every possibility that we will be able to do better than Medicare. We have shown in the past several months that we've gotten closer and closer to the MBS published numbers. Remember that the MBS published numbers also include the public hospital EDs, which have seen an inordinate amount of growth since COVID, really. But going forward, we've seen that tailor off, begin to tailor off, and we should see continued growth from our over-indexation in terms of lung cancer screening and also in terms of the upgrade of the partial licenses to full licenses and the additional licenses that we've managed to secure through the MRI deregulation on the 1st of July. So we should continue to, you know, get closer and closer to the Medicare numbers. And, you know, I don't want to promise anything, but, you know, all indications are that we should continue to, you know, grow strongly and maybe surpass Medicare.
Okay, thank you. And then just in terms of the CT indexation decline in November, I mean, how much forewarning did you have on that? And given, you know, the really strong growth in benefits at the moment, is there any risk that we sort of are hit with more surprise indexation declines over the next 12 months?
That was announced at the same time, Sasha, last year. It was announced at the same time as the indexation. So we were provided with indexation in FY24 or for the FY25 year in May of 2024 that indicated both that we would receive the CPI of 3.5%, but then we were also told that we would receive a 2% reduction from the 1st November that year in CT, which came to a blended average that we calculated at the time of around 2.7%.
Okay, thank you. And then just when I look at your operating leverage on a pro forma basis in FY25, when you back out the synergies, you didn't actually get any operating leverage, so OPEX grew faster than sales. I'm just wondering, excluding the synergies into FY26, can you get underlying operating leverage, given we're going to be cycling some of those, well, still strong top-line growth, but potentially cycling some of those additional locum costs that you had to wear in first half 25?
Yeah, Sasha, I mean, look, this is a directional comment, it's not guidance, but I think the short answer is yes, absolutely, we would expect to see that operating leverage come through. Sort of talked about the fact that, you know, the fact is the industry is, you know, has a shortage of radiologists, right? So we're, in a sense, no different. We do have more regional exposure, so that has created some additional challenges, but we would expect that to moderate as doctors come in from overseas, we increase the use of IDXT, the rate of growth of some of those remote contracts slows, all those things. So as I said earlier, I just think that will become a smaller part of the story overall, and we do expect to get, you know, EBITDA margin expansion, you know, absent just synergies.
Yep. Just on that radiologist coming in from overseas, if we get approval in October, November, when do you think you'll actually get radiologists on the ground in regional areas, which will help the shortage?
In all likelihood, it will occur in the first part of the calendar year. So we're ready to go on the back of that program as soon as it is announced. We're ready to be recruiting in the UK and in Ireland, but we do need to wait for the program to be announced. As Craig indicated earlier, it's a compelling proposition for an NHS radiologist to pretty much double their salary and move to a place where it's a lot more desirable to live. So I expect that the program is going to have some traction, but yeah, it won't happen immediately, but we do expect that at the beginning of the calendar year, which is a useful time for people to move with regard to schooling and the like, we expect to see the first radiologists come into the program at that time. Radiologists overseas are expecting the program to be, it's been flagged for some time, so they're expecting the program to be announced at some stage. We do have recruiters that are, you know, waiting on the announcement, and we'll be ready to hit the ground running as soon as it's made.
All right, that's all from me. Thank you.
And your next question will come from Martin Jacobs with Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Congratulations on the result. Hopefully you can hear me because my earpiece is running out of charge. But well done. A couple from me. I was just wondering, on the teleradiology side, you've got 15% of scans now. Can you give some colour where you think that might be in the next 3 years or so? And to add to that, and how many more additional radiologists you might be able to recruit into that area over the next over that time. I mean, you mentioned 10 to 20 more soon coming, so I was just interested in that.
Yeah, I might just, Martin, I might just comment and let Ian comment, but just so you understand that number of 15%, that is a blended average across IDX and Capital. Right, so a few years ago, we would have been telling you that IDX standalone was around being 15%. That number's probably now closer to 20 if you were to look at IDX standalone. But
yep. You
know, we've only just really started rolling out IDXT across Capital, which is probably sitting around that 4 or 5%. So clearly, if you sort of extrapolate, there's no reason why we can't grow IDXT to a similar percentage. So I just wanted to sort of give you that breakdown of what's in that 15% and perhaps the incoming.
Sure. Right. Our teleradiology business, Martin, has been growing at a CAGR above 30% since inception in August of 2020. And we expect that this kind of growth will continue, although as you get larger, the percentage growth is not as high, but the number of radiologists joining continues to grow. It's the one area where there really is a supply of radiologists because people do like the flexibility that teleradiology offers, and the technology that we offer in teleradiology also makes it very attractive for radiologists to join us. So I expect that teleradiology will continue to grow. I think at some stage it will level off, and that'll be perhaps at close on 30%, in between 25 and 30%, we might see some leveling off at that stage because you still do need radiologists on the ground to do a lot of the work, the interventional work, the injections and the like that teleradiologists are not able to do.
Right, thank you. And secondly, you mentioned that lung screening program, although, 1 month in, is above expectations. I was just wondering if you maybe give us a bit more colour on the spread of utilisation of that program and any other colour you can add.
Thanks, Martin. The beauty of that program is that it's a CT-based program, and it's based on the high-resolution, high-speed CTs that are now in place, and IDX has been acquiring these CTs for quite a long time. It's a CT's our highest margin modality, CT itself, even though lung cancer screening is not as highly paid as some other CT tests are, it's still a profitable modality, and the referrals from the lung cancer screening program also make the program very, very worthwhile. It's a win-win program. It's a real win for patients because disease is picked up earlier, when it can be more effectively treated, both more effectively for the patient, but also more cost-effectively for the payer. And it's a great program for the industry. In fact, where we see the program working in North America and Europe, it's had outstanding success in terms of saving lives, but also in terms of driving volume for the diagnostic industry, and then also to healthcare more broadly. And the volume that's being driven in is for the earlier detection of cancer. So, cancers detected earlier are treated far more effectively in every respect than cancer diagnosed late.
The one thing I would just say, Martin, just provide you some context that, when you look at the two programs, the MRI deregulation, the National Lung Cancer Screening Program, just think about the way we're thinking about it in terms of budgeting. We would expect benefit of those extra 16 partial licenses converting full and the three or four extra machines. We would expect that revenue benefit to be significantly more incrementally than through the National Lung Cancer Screening Program.
Yeah, okay. And just last one from me. So, you know, you guys, like everyone, have had time to plan for MRI deregulation. You mentioned that Olympic Park's got its third machine up and running now. What have you seen from your competitors in terms of, you know, that willingness to benefit from the deregulation phase that the industry's now in?
So we've seen good, strong growth in areas where we were able to, I guess, convince the specialists that we were offering a, you know, useful modality from the 1st of July that they'd be able to use, would be very convenient for their patients, and they'd get good diagnostic workups done. Where we were able to brief the specialists well, we saw the program pick up very, very quickly. In some other areas where we've had less access to specialists than before, so for example, capital historically has been very much a GP-oriented business as opposed to a specialist-oriented business. So it has taken some time for us to work with the capital marketing team, with their medical liaison officers, and to upskill them to be able to market to specialists as well as GPs. And as you say, there was, you know, ample time to prepare them, and, you know, much of that preparation was put into place and was done, but it's still, you know, when it comes to the 1st of July, it doesn't all happen at the the turnover of the legislation to allow billing. So there is some ramp up, and we are seeing that ramp up occurring now. There is some, you know, there are additional fully licensed MRIs out in the market as well. So there would be areas where we would be impacted by additional competition in those areas. But overall, the MRI deregulation program has been, you know, a great success for the industry as well as for ourselves.
Right. So no meaningful competitive response at this point, albeit early days.
Yeah, so depending on the market that we're talking about, there are additional, you know, competitor MRIs that have been upgraded from partial to full, but we're not seeing a material impact from that.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much again.
Your next question will come from Elyse Shapiro with Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, congrats on the result. Maybe just picking apart the synergies piece quickly with IDXT kind of in the frame of mind. Does the $14 million synergies also assume more fulsome adoption of IDXT across the CADGE network, or is that not included?
No, that's not included, Elyse.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question will come.
Even though it's not included in the actual synergy number, it is a real benefit because oftentimes the IDXT radiologists are doing work that would have taken a longer time to report or may have been lost in the absence of having the ability to rely on IDXT to support that extra work coming in. Capital has done very little external teleradiology work previously. But, you know, their use of some of the IDXT competitors was really immaterial in terms of the savings that we're able to generate by switching Capital teleradiology from competitors to IDXT.
Got it. Thanks.
And your next question will come from Dan Hurren with MST Marquee. Please go ahead.
Well, good morning. Thanks very much. Oh, sorry, good afternoon. Wanting to just go back to employee costs again, I'm just wondering how you think about the Fair Work Commission recommendations for radiographer wages and how that sort of fits into your outlook for 26 and beyond.
So we are aware of the Fair Work recommendations, and when they do come in, then we would expect to see some impact, but we don't expect it to be material at this point. And in fact, with the discussions that the industry has been having, I think that the impact that we'd be looking at in radiology would not be material in the near term. Or medium term.
Okay, so to be clear, you have no allowance for any of those increases in sort of the broad outlook you're talking about today.
We do. So we do have allowances in there because we do expect that our wage cost will continue to increase for a number of reasons, but because inflation's a lot lower than it was we received indexation again and expect to receive indexation each year, and there are efficiencies that we've spoken about in several other areas. We don't expect it's going to have a material impact going forward.
Okay, so can you put a number to the number you're expecting out of the Fair Work Commission increases then? Because the recommendations are fairly high.
Yeah, a couple of comments I would make. Look, we can't put a number on it, but what I would say to you is a couple of things. One, we generally as an employer pay above market, so some of those recommendations coming out of that are not relevant to IDX. We also have a number of EBAs in place where we have negotiated agreements, and certainly when you look at this overall, it's just not a big issue in the context of the overall numbers. And I think when you look at analyst consensus for FY26, we'd be, pre the announcement of this result, we would be, comfortable that consensus number for EBITDA would incorporate anything that you would be referring to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Your next question will come from Vanessa Thompson with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Dave Stanton sneaking on for Vanessa, who's kind of giving me her phone. Just very quickly, because I'm not that smart, basically, can you give us some directional colour for depreciation amortisation? In F25, you're at about $57 million by our calculations. Can you talk to, potentially what you expect for 26, and then I've got one more after that, please.
David, I think, look, we, again, can't put a specific number on it, but I mean, I think if you have a look at the numbers we've disclosed in slide 24 of the investor presentation in terms of pro forma depreciation, I think, that would be a guide.
Understood. And is it the same for interest, net interest expense for 26 as well, or is that going to step up?
No, I think probably to my earlier comments, I think, we would expect to see, this is the interest on the debt facilities, not the finance cost of the right of use assets. But if I just look at the debt facilities, we've disclosed that the effective interest rate in FY25 was 6.24%. I'd expect that to be sort of, half to 0.75% lower in FY26. That's assuming that sort of base rates stay where they are at the moment.
So compared to the all-in interest expense of call it $29 million in 25, should broad brush, we'd be expecting that to go up or down?
So if I look at, I'm going to reference specific numbers, so slide 24, the pro forma finance cost is $21.5 million on debt facilities. I would expect that number to come down.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Dr. Akatish for closing remarks.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for your participation and your engagement with us on the call today. We are very excited about what Financial 26 has to offer to IDX and our patients, and we're appreciative of all of your time on the call. Thank you all.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.